skinnies, and spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
That card is a house.
Have you looked at that deck?
This deck won't survive rotation at all.
Because the Ramanop red deck is like, dude, burn, burn.
It's unconditional enter the battlefield goodness. Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast. My name is Sean. I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Toasty.
Are you saying it's hot up in the Bay Area?
I mean, it's only in the 90s. I'm saying I got too much sun today.
Well, I tell you what, living in Fresno, it's usually getting up in the 100 teens, possibly close to 120 in the summer, most years. But this year, it's actually not been too bad. Not more than like 100 in the last couple of weeks, which is pretty abnormal. But when you say hot being 95, I get jealous. I'm not going to lie.
Well, that is why you have a pool, right?
This is true. This is true. And ever since I've become quite the pool aficionado and learning how to take care of it, and it's been quite gratifying. And our pool looks pretty darn nice. So definitely helps with the get-togethers and the barbecues and whatnot.
Yeah.
So cool. All right. Well, we got a couple things to talk about here today. Number one, we want to remind you that this show is brought to you by our sponsor, Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com. If you haven't already gone to pick up your Commander 2017 decks, head on over there and use the promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, and you can get 10% off your order. I'll tell you right now, I went and I ordered my set just the other day, and it took $13.99 off the price, and with the free shipping, I was able to get my set of decks for about $126. So that's a pretty good deal, considering the market price on these decks is going up. There's a lot of valuable cards in there already. So, but that aside, any singles, any other boosters, any boxes of Magic cards you're looking for, head over to Flipside Gaming and use the promo code WINCONDITION for 10% off your order. You will not be disappointed.
No, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm so excited to get those decks. But anyway, so let's jump on into our first item of business here. We had a Grand Prix last weekend, GP Denver, which was a standard tournament. And it was very interesting. We saw a lot of, we saw some different stuff.
A good amount of variance for once.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we've seen Ramanap Red dominate tournaments. We've seen Mono Black Zombies dominate tournaments. But we had a different one this tournament around. Which deck would that be, Greg?
Oh, wasn't it Godfrey's Gift?
In my dreams. Although
in your dreams, no.
We will touch on that a little bit. It finished just a little bit outside of the top eight. But
your top dominating deck is Temur Energy.
Yes.
Which is a surprise from the past because, of course, we know Temur Energy does not have Aetherworks Marvel anymore. So they cannot cheat out that Ulamog.
No.
But
And it's not.
Man, this deck is really cool.
It is, and it's not the Dynavolt Tower build that some of us were used to seeing, you know, earlier on. This is just a straight up teamer value energy deck, just beating you in the face.
Three Glory Bringers in the main.
Yep. If that doesn't say burn you in the face, I don't know what does.
I don't know. I think a braid does. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, but after watching some of the coverage, I would say probably one of the most dominant cards in the whole deck was actually Long Tusk Cub. I mean,
card's really strong.
If you can land Long Tusk Cub on turn two and get in and do some damage, the value on that thing is ridiculous because any given time at an instant speed, you can give it a +1/+1 counter by using two energy. And yeah. I mean, the name of the deck is Teamer Energy, for crying out loud. But if you don't have efficient single target removal, then a Long Tusk Cub, just one of them, can absolutely run away with the game. So, yeah. I mean,
almost literally.
Yeah, right. And you're backing it up with four Rogue Refiners, which produce energy, Servant of the Conduit, which produce energy.
Attune with Aether,
which produces energy. Whirler Virtuoso. Yeah. I mean, you got one, two. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's do it the other way. One, two creatures in this deck that do not produce energy. All the other ones produce energy. And then, I mean.
And that's only a four of those creatures, so.
Right, right. So you're definitely going to be plentiful in the energy department. And with, you know, obviously Long Tusk Cub being one energy dump, you have Whirler Virtuosos to pop out Thopters. You have Servant of the Conduit to add mana of any color to your mana pool.
Yep.
And Bristling Hydra, not only does it get bigger, but it gives itself hexproof. This deck is just strong. It's really, really strong. And it's got all the removal, you know, you need at the right sort of, I guess, percentage with the two Abrades, the four Harness Lightnings, the two Magma Sprays. And I would consider, since it has two Sky Sovereigns in the main, at least the first place deck does, those are technically considered removal spells as they do three damage upon entering. So,
and then, you know, you bring into your sideboard, you get to add in that Chandra Flamecaller. Confiscation Coup. I think that card's a real good blowout in this deck, personally.
I love
Radiant
that card.
Flames.
Yes. Oh, Radiant Flames, I would say, is probably one of the most efficient and versatile ways to wipe the board. I mean, if you've got a bunch of 2/2 or even, you know, 2/3 creatures and your opponent's playing, like, I don't know, White Blue Monument, you have the option of playing Radiant Flames on one, you know, and yeah. You can play it on one or two or three. So just a good solid piece of wiping removal.
So to throw it out there, looking at it, top three are all the same deck. The next change in a Temur Energy deck is all the way down in, like, 18th place.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a four-color Temur Energy deck. What the heck is he running here?
He's splashing for the Scarab God.
Oh, yeah.
And
and a cut to ribbons in the spell the spell department. Mm-hmm. Nice.
But that's about it.
So it's just Temur Energy putting a couple other value cards in here to just stretch it a little bit in a different direction. So, okay. But I think it looks like, with these top three, the pure efficiency of just running the straight Temur build is a little bit more effective.
Yes,
so,
I agree completely.
Yeah. Yeah. And after the top three Temur Energy decks, we have a Ramunap Red deck, and another Ramunap Red deck in 4th and 5th. But
it's got black for Cut to Ribbons, I think.
Yeah. It's looking like the only black that it's running is for that Cut to Ribbons.
Which is surprising, because you'd think they'd be running Unlicensed Disintegration in that spot.
I mean, it seems pretty good, Unlicensed Disintegration, but you're not really running the artifact backup for it.
True.
However, the unrestricted instant speed removal is pretty tempting, even if you do not have the even if you don't have the artifacts.
Have you looked at that deck?
I think I'm looking at it right now here.
Do you see that sideboard? Two of Release the Gremlins.
Oh yeah. I guess Mardu Vehicles is back to being a thing. So you better be packing
really
some
cool.
heat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's that Warping Whale. I don't know. I mean, obviously I guess I haven't seen too much coverage where they actually show board wipes like Fumigate or even Hour of Devastation. Or
there's nobody running them.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them top. I mean, most of it is targeted removal or countering. Now, there are a couple decks that are running Dusk to Dawn.
That is true, especially those White Blue Monument decks. And is Approach of the Second Sun running those too? I'm not 100% sure.
It might be.
Yeah.
But the thing is Dusk to Dawn is honestly better than most of our Wraths right now.
Yeah. And given the correct creature package, it's just doubly effective.
Right.
Seeing as it can bring those creatures back.
But I'm noticing a return of like Walking Blissa and Cataclysmic Gearhulk in some of these decks.
Yeah, you've been touting Cataclysmic Gearhulk for a long time, and especially with
don't
these.
Don't tell anybody.
Especially with the God Pharaoh's Gift decks running around, that card is a house. It's just really, really good. Yeah. And I'm seeing a lot more, speaking of sideboard, I'm seeing a lot more of these Aether Sphere Harvesters out here.
I think people are seeing it as a really, really just strong card because of the fact that so many times is it just getting in for a good lifelink. I mean, usually you're getting an extra 6 life from it.
Yeah.
And the energy decks, maybe even more.
Yeah, and it seems like the only creature this card can't block, the Aethersphere Harvester, is a Hazoret. I mean, you know, everything else out the gate, even like Kalidus, I mean, this thing can definitely block it, and you're getting that lifelink, so you're absolutely correct when you say it gets you that 6 life back. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, we're not looking at a team or energy deck right now, but I mean, if you have unlimited energy, then that card just seems to be really, really good. I mean, it also blocks Heart of Kieran, you know?
You know what else it does?
What does it do?
It doesn't die to good removal.
It doesn't. It doesn't die to Glorybringer either. It blocks Glorybringer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, that's pretty darn good. I like that. I've seen a lot of Chandra's Defeat rolling around. I haven't actually seen too many people casting it.
Right.
But, you know, seems okay. And then going back to the Warping Whale, I know we talk about countering the sorceries, but it doesn't hurt to be able to play a Hazoret on turn 3, you know, just getting that extra turn advantage if you want to create that 1/1 Eldrazi Scion to ramp you. I mean, red suffers from not being able to ramp, and there's, you know, no efficient mana rocks, but Warping Whale can get you a turn ahead in any deck if you are running that colorless mana.
Especially if you've got the deserts. I mean, the Ramunap red decks are running the deserts to be able to get that additional colorless mana. So why not utilize it for something like, Warping Whale or Eldrazi Obligator.
Yeah, and you got those Seagate Wreckages running around too. Those can definitely provide that colorless mana. So, yeah. I like Warping Whale, and it's definitely a card that I'm going to be sad to see go because it never really had its time in the light. It might have snuck in, you know, here and there for a severe nail in the coffin type win, but it just never really saw its time, sad face. But we'll move on here from Ramunap Red. Then we have a white-blue monument, sure enough, in, what is it, sixth place? Yeah, sixth place. Okay. So as much as I've heard about white-blue monument, I haven't quite dove too deep into looking at one of these decks yet. So you were saying Dusk Till Dawn, and boom. There's a 3 of right here.
You want to know what's really funny? The actual card that's the best in these decks is that Cloud Blazer.
Oh, for sure. I mean, 5 mana for a 2/2 flyer that gets you 2 life and draws you 2 cards for 5 mana. That just seems like so much value.
It's really good. It's really strong.
Yeah.
And then, you know, oh no, it died. God Pharaoh's Gifted? Now it's a 4/4 that gains you 2 life and draws you 2 cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you got for free.
Yep. Yep. Definitely a good reason to be running white-blue in your God Pharaoh's Gift deck. Mm-hmm. But, and then, you know, 4 of Spellqueller. That's another one that I'll be sad to see go. It had its time when white-blue flash was a thing. I don't ever think that there was a real dominant, like, pure spirits deck, but, Spellqueller seeing play in Modern as well. So it's not really going anywhere, but you know, it's just a really good value card. So and then you've also got the 2 Metallic Rebukes. It's a good counter spell, but you're really only gonna be able to use that Oketra's Monument to actually improvise. Because you're not really getting too much value out of the artifacts in this deck.
No.
But Metallic Rebuke is a really, really good counterspell. I love it. obviously Oketra's Monument, your two Declaration in Stone, Solid White Removal, which, again, is leaving the four. Is this deck, won't survive rotation at all.
It might. It might.
Well, look at the main. The only creature that's not rotating is Cloudblazer. I mean, Bygone Bishop, Handweir Militia Captain, Selfless Spirit, Spellqueller, Thraben Inspector, all rotating.
I mean, you don't think there's any card that can replace it in Standard?
You could probably find some other efficient creatures, but I'm just saying it's going to take a while. Dusk Dawn, Oketra's Monument, I guess, are kind of the backbones of this deck.
What if this deck transforms Temur Energy and adds in Oketra's Monument, and you kind of get this four-color Monument deck?
You don't have too many energy producing creatures that only cost you one mana. I mean, unless you want to start running Minister of Inquiries or anything like that. The real clutch in this deck, though, is the fact that you've got, you know, Thraben Inspector, Selfless Spirit, Handweir Militia Captain, all cost just two mana.
Or one, yeah.
So if you can get the right amount of efficient, you know, one and two drop creatures, then sure, you know, Oketra's Monument can survive as a deck, but it's just looking like now is the time to play it if you really want to. And I heard something interesting, White Blue Monument, a lot of people say you got to play it almost as if it's a control deck and not necessarily an aggro deck.
I mean, that's the same way you play zombies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, you just can't overcommit to the board right now. Because there are these cards like Radiant Flame, Sweltering Suns, Declaration in Stone, where if you overcommit, you lose, period.
Right, right. I mean, Radiant Flames is a 3-drop, and Sweltering Suns is a 3-drop, so there definitely are some 3-drops that are floating around that can wipe the board if you're playing those weenie creatures. Yeah. Oh, I almost missed this.
And your only protection is Selfless Spirit.
Right. Yeah, Selfless Spirit, definitely. I almost forgot about Westvale Abbey. That seems like another excellent win con for this deck. I mean,
it really is. And we're going to be losing it soon.
Yeah, again. Yeah, sad face again. You know, that would be an interesting thought process, maybe a segment for a future episode, like how rotation's going to affect these decks, which ones will survive. I mean, obviously something like Mardu Vehicles will still be able to have a very effective presence, but... And then, like,
yeah.
Temur Energy. I mean, Energy is a mechanic that's going to be around post-rotation for sure.
Correct.
But, yeah, White-Blue Monument. It's time here is limited.
You ask me, next rotation, the deck that's going to be best based on the illegal leaks we have seen is going to be the Energy deck. I mean, it's doing well now, and it's going to continue to do well because it's unopposed. Now... whether or not they unban Marvel, we'll have to wait and see. We know Feldar Guardian is not going to come back because Saheeli Rai is still in the format and that combo is still there.
Yep.
But Aetherworks Marvel was oppressive because of Ulamog. And if Ulamog's gone, why keep using Aetherworks Marvel?
Yep. Okay, quick question. Shot out of a cannon. You got Thalia, Heretic Athar, and you've got Authority of the Consoles, both doing the creatures entering the battlefield tapped. Is Authority of the Consoles a good enough replacement for Thalia? I know she's a human.
Definitely.
You think so?
Definitely. There's a reason why if you're running Thalia in your sideboard, you probably have a two of Authority of the Consoles. Because... when you're playing against that Ramunap red deck, you need to be able to have control.
Yeah.
And Authority of the Consoles says, whoa, slow down a bit. I want to gain some life for you putting creatures on the battlefield. Because the Ramunap red deck is like, dude, burn. And now they have to wait and you're gaining life.
Right.
It really puts them in a hole.
Right. And let's not forget the advantage of Authority of the Consoles in that it does give you one life whenever a creature enters the battlefield under an opponent's control. So for one white mana, you're getting that effect. The non-basic lands, especially in Standard, those are usually going to enter tapped regardless. But you also have that life gain, which, for one mana is huge. That seems really good. So yeah, Authority of the Consoles, I think we'll definitely see.
I think it's a good enough, but I don't think it's going to be a replacement because it is not a 3-2 for Striker.
No, not that part of it was definitely good. I mean, Thalia's Lieutenant along with Thalia made for some seriously good aggressive decks that held white. And I mean, especially humans decks. We saw humans decks, you know, for a while. Mean,
do you remember my green white Eldritch Evolution deck?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thalia's Lancers and Thalia were so good. And yep. Of course, in my sideboard, I had Consul of the Authorities.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Also, one other thing that I was looking into, just because I was super curious, was the interaction, because you were running that Eldritch Evolution, is the interaction between Spell Queller and Eldritch Evolution. So let's say you cast Eldritch Evolution and you sacrifice a creature as part of paying the cost. And I cast Spell Queller and I exile Eldritch Evolution. If I were to then blink out my, or at least remove my Spell Queller till the end of turn, well, no, it would have to be blinked. But the whole interaction of when you recast Eldritch Evolution, forcing you to sacrifice another creature, that seemed super duper busted to me. Unfortunately, I missed a line of text on Spellqueller where it says may. So you do have the opportunity to not cast the Eldritch Evolution, which would not allow me to just continuously blink my Spellqueller to make you eradicate your board. But, you know, we dream big, like I said, but just for you rules junkies out there, yeah. So, cool. All right, well, that will do it for our talk about the white-blue monument deck. And then we have another Ramen Up red deck, Splash and Black, in the seventh place slot. I think that's pretty much the same as we saw before.
And then pulling up the rear in eighth place, we have a mono black zombies deck.
Yep. Pretty standard. 4 Crypt Breaker, 4 Diagraph Colossus, 4 Dread Wanderer, 4 Lord of the Accursed, 1 Metallic Mimic, 4 Relentless Dead.
Now, it looks like they're going heavier on the Dark Salvations, Grasp of Darknesses, and Liliana's Mastery. They're also running a 2-0 Scavenger Grounds because it's just good.
Yep.
They are running only Cletus in the sideboard, so he's no longer in the main. It's kind of interesting. It looks like they really needed that extra removal. Gonti is a one of, allows them to just get advantage.
Yep.
I think I was watching in, actually it was this deck in like round 6. He had played a Gonti and got a Chandra Flamecaller from it and just started dominating the Temur board. Because Flamecaller is really good. And he won it out because, you know, 2-3 ones with haste wins games.
I mean, you don't have to tell me twice about Gonti. I mean, I'd absolutely love that guy. But
don't you have like an EDH deck of him?
Yeah. That guy's super fun to put a Blade of Selves on when you're playing in a 4-player game.
That's rude.
But, yeah, I mean, Never to Return in the sideboard versus the main. I mean, it's running the 3 Fatal Push. This definitely seems like a much more aggressive style of zombie deck that can sideboard into a more control-y fashion.
Yes.
As you also alluded to with the Kalidus in the sideboard versus the main, this thing's looking to drop quick creatures, quick, grow them quickly, and then smash face as quickly as possible. Yeah, with the Never to Returns and the Sky Sovereigns, Transgress the Mind, Liliana's and Kalidus, that's, wow, this deck can just transform like that just after one game. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gives a lot of difference.
Hey, Greg.
What?
What's the deck in 10th place there? Piloted by Corey Burkhart.
Was that a God Pharaoh's Gift deck?
That is Jeskai God Pharaoh's Gift. And I also want to mention that right below him, Owen Turtenwald, finishing right after him, is also running the same deck. But I think we may have found a combination of this build that may be rising to the top in terms of being effective. Sadly, it is not playing Second Harvest. I know. I'm disappointed. But, I mean, you see Angel of Invention just being an absolute powerhouse.
Yep.
You could have picked these things up for dirt cheap almost right after the release of Kaladesh. I mean, nobody was running this.
No.
And now all of a sudden, the ability to, quote unquote, eternalize a 4-4 flying vigilance lifelink that you can then put two more, that could become a 4-4, that could become a 6-6, that's just value.
It's pretty good. Yeah. And, you know, the +1/+1 ain't bad either.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. I love this build. I really hope we see more of this God Pharaoh's gift. And I think it finishing just outside the top eight means that it's not going to get as much attention as the top eight builds. So hopefully people don't come packing as much heat for this as they do for other decks.
And they're going to find an answer as to what they need to be able to win and get the top eight in the next round of standard GPs.
Yeah. And then just trying to next level everybody out there. I mean, you're going to have, you obviously have a Braids flying around everywhere. And we're seeing more and more Scavenger Grounds. Both cards are absolute kryptonite for this deck. So if there is a way to, let's take a quick look at the sideboard here. This guy, we're running three dispels here. Corey Burkhardt is running three dispels in the sideboard, three negates, and two Mausoleum Wanderer. Talk about secret tech. Because if you can resurrect this guy with your God Pharaoh's gift, all of a sudden sacrificing it causes your opponent to have to pay four to counter a spell because it is a 4/4. So that is pretty ridiculous. That's great.
That's pretty strong.
That is great value.
I wonder why they're not running it in the main.
Yeah.
Probably because it doesn't draw you a card like Insolent Neonate does.
That is true, and the fact that it does counter instants and sorceries when you sacrifice it, that seems like it would be pretty strong, even in a main, considering you're going to be going up against those Abrades anyway. So, yeah, I mean, this deck is definitely in its infant stages, and I don't think that we're going to be seeing this go away at all anytime soon. I mean, just let's briefly do the whole what's rotating thing here. Insolent Neonate, that is a pretty key piece that does kind of get things moving. We've got what else here? What else? Land base is safe. The sideboard, you're looking at Dispel. Dispel didn't get a reprint, did it?
Nope.
Oh man, that's gonna be
and
rough.
And the Mausoleum Wanderer.
And the Mausoleum Wanderer, yep.
So this is pretty safe.
Yeah.
Going into rotation.
Yeah. No, it's gonna be a good deck moving forward, which will then call for a little bit more iterating, more innovation. So maybe Jeskai is the right color combination. Maybe there's a different one out there. Maybe a four color Jeskai God Pharaoh's Gift will emerge. Who knows?
You're just dreaming for green. I know it.
We are. I mean, you're running Aether Hub, right? I mean, maybe there's an energy build to this thing that makes it hum a little bit better.
Ooh, maybe.
We will see. Stay tuned. Okay, and then just below that, we have a mono white Eldrazi deck. Do you want to take a look at this real quick? I haven't seen too much mono white Eldrazi. Yeah. So, I mean, my first thought is it's going to be, there's a lot of white control leading the way for some bigger, fatter Eldrazi later on, but
I'm willing to bet you that there is the three-drop blinker with Cataclysmic Gearhulk.
Okay, let's
I do see an Eldrazi Displacer. I do not see a Cataclysmic Gearhulk at all, but it is running Abyssin, Matterer Shaper, Selfless Spirit, Thought Not Seer, Graven Inspector, and Walking Ballista.
Yep.
Along with a couple cast out, two Declarations in Stone, Sky Sovereign, Stasis Snare, and a Warping Whale.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it is a little bit light on the main deck removal, so I can't call this a control deck.
Walking Ballista, Thought Not Seer?
Walking Ballista and Thought Not Seer are definitely, yes, those are definitely some control aspects. I almost don't consider Thought Not Seer a control card as much because it is a 4-4 for 4. That's just a solid mid-range card, but the added benefit of being able to get that card out of your opponent's hand is huge. I'm not going to deny
it. Yes.
It is a pretty control-y card.
And then in the side, another cast out, a Fragmentize. Getting rid of some of those artifacts.
Yeah, get rid of that Heart of Kieran.
Solemnity. No more energy.
You know what Fragmentize does not get rid of? God Pharaoh's Gift.
Really?
No, Fragmentize is converted mana cost 4 or less. Oh, yeah. Artifact or enchantment. That's right. So, yeah, keep that in mind when you're packing heat against artifacts.
But cast out certainly does.
It does. It does. And you're mentioning Solemnity.
Yeah, I see a Solemnity in here as a sideboard because energy decks are doing well.
Yep. And we do see a fair share of Planeswalkers. I keep forgetting that Solemnity shuts down all Planeswalkers.
It sure does.
So that part of it is pretty huge. Again, the one of Warping Whale. I guess with the Eldrazi, it kind of makes sense. But, God, that's like a couple of these decks we've looked at where I see one in the sideboard. That's pretty cool. Unfortunately, it is going bye-bye soon. But, gosh, it's a good card. Really, really good card. Four Scavenger Grounds. Got that hate on those graveyards. The Shefet Dunes. The Spawning Bed. Sacrifice Spawning Bed. Put 3/1/1 colorless Eldrazi Scion creature tokens on the battlefield. They have sacrifice. Okay. All right. Just more colorless sources. And, mm-hmm. I mean, it costs 6 to activate. Are you really looking to activate this to get those Eldrazi Scions?
I don't know. That seems like an add-in so he can have it there in the event that he needs it. But ultimately what it comes down to is it taps for colorless.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder why he's running only 2 Aether Hubs.
He doesn't have anything else for energy. He doesn't even have Aether Sphere Harvesters in here.
No. No, he doesn't. Aether Sphere Harvesters, what, a 3-drop?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I mean, I don't even understand why he's running in the first place. There aren't any cards that use the energy, so it just kind of sits there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Aether Hub probably seems like it would be most useful in providing the colorless mana in this scene.
Exactly,
in this
that was
scene
about
here.
What I would say, is because it enters the battlefield untap and taps for colorless.
That's a good point, yeah.
And it'll fib to your opponent instead of playing a waste.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess turn 1 Aether Hub can signify a broad array of decks that you could be facing. So
exactly.
It does add that element of surprise. I totally missed this. 2 Warping Whale in the main. I'm not going to stop talking about Warping Whale here. This is...
I know you're not.
This is super exciting. I mean, look at this. Turn 2 Warping Whale, turn 3 Thought Not Seer. Get it a turn early. Catch your opponent off guard. His Silver Bullet is now gone. That seems super good. So, exile target. Oh, and its other mode, which I haven't even mentioned, exile target creature with power or toughness 1 or less. So, I mean, Earthshaker Kenra, you can just exile it. Don't even try to eternalize it. That's just a good card. Okay, what else here? Mattery Shaper, that's value. Eldrazi Displacer, more value. And the ability to manipulate your opponent's creatures with Eldrazi Displacer also is huge.
Yep. Get in with things. Spell Queller gets eaten up. Like, it just does stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And you
Hey, you know what's really good with an Eldrazi Displacer?
What?
What's the thing from Westvale Abbey?
Oh. Ormondal?
Yeah, because, you know, you blink it and it'll come back not as Ormondal.
Wait, say that one more time.
You blink Ormondal, right?
Right.
Enters the exile, it's no longer Ormondal.
Oh, so you're saying to get rid of Ormondal. Yes, you are absolutely correct, yeah. I mean, it's indestructible, and this is one of the very few ways you're able to deal with it. You're absolutely
right.
It's
like, hey, I'm going to need you to sacrifice 5 more creatures to get your Ormondal again. Oh, wait, I still have Eldrazi Displacer.
Right. And it's that late in the game, you're like, I'll sacrifice my spawning bed and put 3 more out, sack them all, use my Eldrazi Displacer again. Ha!
There's all sorts of things that you can do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Although I'd probably not sacrifice the spawning bed because it does tap for colorless.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Yeah. And then, you know, the removal here is You got the cast out, the stasis snare. I mean, you got your enchantment removal here.
Yeah. And they're all instant based. They both all have flash.
Yep. Yeah, which is super important. Great, great removal in a mono white deck. The double white in Stasis Snare is the only thing really holding it back from being more prevalent, but in the right deck, it is super powerful.
Yeah, like this deck.
Exactly. Exactly. No Gideon. Does Gideon not like Eldrazi, or what's up with that?
I think it just comes down to he's not good enough.
Yeah.
Which is weird because an Anthem's pretty good.
Yeah. And on four, you know, you're expecting to go Thought Not Seer, and that's it.
It's like, what do you really want to play? Is Thought Not Seer, or do you want to have a Gideon?
Yeah, yeah. So there is that control aspect to it. Okay, all right, you got me. Thought Not Seer is a control card.
Thank you.
I'm a believer. I mean, you want to talk about a target for Eldrazi Displacer.
yeah, sure. Go draw some more cards. I'll blink it, come back. Okay.
Yeah.
Do it again at the end of your turn. Do it twice. Yay!
That card you just got, yeah, you can keep it. You know, let's take something else out of there.
Yep.
Forget about it. Jeez. So good.
It's really good.
It is.
And I mean, it allows you to sculpt their hand. Who doesn't like sculpting your opponent's hand?
I know, right? I mean, between that and Gonti just affecting your opponent's cards in such a way that they just don't even want to play anymore. No.
Oh, God, that's rude.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's circle back here. We have covered on through about the 10th and 11th position. We have another Ramunap Red, another Jeskai God Pharaoh's Gift. Let's see here. Zombie Emerge?
Yep.
Ooh, this looks cool. I like this one.
It's definitely a lot more interesting as an Emerge deck. It has a lot of great cards. I think Emerge is still a great mechanic, and I think what it is just a bunch of people want to play with it before it's gone.
True. Yeah, that is a mechanic that we'll be rotating out. There was a while where Elder Deepfiend was dominating everybody, and yes, it is still a good card. I would love to see it.
There was a Monument, or a Jeskai, not Jeskai, a Temur Energy deck which was running it.
Oh, okay.
In the sideboard, so it's like if they needed to, they could sacrifice Cloud Blazer.
Yeah.
And drop it for two.
Yeah. And, I mean, looking at the targets for this Elder Deepfiend here, I mean, Prized Amalgam and Champion of Wits alone just seem like super-duper value targets.
Yep.
You get that Eternalize on the Champion after it goes to the graveyard. Prized Amalgam is just going to come back from the graveyard.
Yep.
Super cool. Super, super cool.
Yeah, lots of good cards in this.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward what it's doing. Of course, it does have a 3 of Glorybringer in the side and 2 of Summary Dismissal.
Hey, that's not a zombie, but that's okay. We'll let it slide because Glorybringer is just so good.
Yeah.
Fevered Visions. Yes. I am a proponent of Fevered Visions, absolutely.
It could be because some people are still playing with Pull From Tomorrow, even though I don't think that card has any real play right now.
Yeah. No, Pull From Tomorrow it's a good card, but it's just hard to let games go that long, especially with, you know, Ramunap Red and the zombies and all this other stuff. You're going to want to be doing stuff other than just drawing cards to find answers. Like, you need those answers to be in your hand already. So, yeah.
No, you can't wait. And then, pushing on, we've got one last deck in the top 16,
mm-hmm.
which is your favorite.
Oh, no. What is it?
Blue-White Godfair's Gift.
Oh, yes.
And is running your refurbish.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, let me pull this up here. By Zach Elsk. Or Elsick. Zach Elsick.
No. Edwin Ng.
Edwin Ng. There it is. Oh, okay. Yeah, I went way too far down there. Okay. Yep. Very, very similar. It's not running the red, so you don't get that Insolent Neonate. It's running the Thraben Inspector too. So by dropping the red, it does make this a little bit more rotation proof, which is good.
Glint Nest Crane's pretty good here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It would be a lot better if it did put him in the graveyard in this case. But
it's not a black card or a green card, okay?
No, it's not. Hey, Champion of Wits is a blue card. So, it is a blue card. Yeah. Yeah, but no, this, yeah, this is good. I really think that we're going to be seeing more of this and more innovations with this deck.
It's still nice to see variation. There's such a variation currently going on in Standard right now that if you think of a deck, you can play it. Even Tier 2 decks are doing well. There's just so much playability. This is anybody's game right now. And the only reason why you may not be topping is because of the fact that it's just play mistakes. It happens. I mean, I played against pros in France, and I didn't make any play mistakes. My partners, on the other hand, with the better decks, they did.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's so much fun to take advantage of that aspect of Magic, the Brewers aspect, and then being able to take decks to FNMs and now even GPs and be competitive with all these, you know, deck variations is so cool. You know, I love that Magic's in that spot and we're not in a, you know, Mardu Vehicles lock or a Teemer.
Aetherworks Marvel?
Aetherworks Marvel lock, yes. Or a Saheeli Cat. I was running Saheeli Cat and I loved it. I think there was ways around it, but people were just like, I'm not going to bother. Let's just ban it. But whatever.
Yeah, I think what ended up there is the fact that the deck was actually just oppressive because of how quickly it went.
True. True. Yeah. I'll give you that. Okay. So let's move on to our next topic. We have Ixalan coming up in a month.
A little less than that, but yeah, about a month.
Okay.
Now, like, pre-release weekend is at the end of next month.
Okay. Okay, cool. So yeah, it is definitely upon us, and there's a new and interesting thing going on here. Greg, do you want to...
No, that's not a thing.
It's not a thing? Well...
It's totally a thing. So, as you all know, Ixalan is about hunting for treasure. And if you didn't know, congratulations, you know now.
And now you know, yes.
Knowing's half the battle, right?
Right, G.I. Joe, yeah.
What's the other half of the battle, right?
Oh my gosh.
Anyhow, so how Wizards is doing this is geocaching. So this is how they're going to be releasing spoilers for Ixalan. So I'm pulling it up right now just so I can take a look at it.
Okay.
And read off of it. So you can go to a website. If you search up geocaching.com, promotions, Magic, it'll come up. And essentially, 1,500 people globally will be chosen to get a trackable geocaching chip. Essentially, it's going to be a GPS that'll track where it's gone in the world.
Huh.
Right? Sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you only have, well, based on this, we're looking at 7 o'clock on Friday night, 5 hours. So until midnight tonight. I'm willing to bet you that everybody's filled them out. But what's really cool about it is that there are already around 15 of them out there, 15 or 20. And they've already logged distances. So what it's going to come down to is based on how far that tracker and those trackers, those 1,500 trackers travel, whether it be between state lines, country lines. I don't know if they'll be able to track in outer space because I know that there are ISS players that play Magic.
I think there's some Martians out there looking forward to some dinosaur pirate action.
Right. But essentially the idea is based on how far these things travel is how you will unlock additional spoilers. So if you're one of the lucky few that get one of these trackers, go backpacking. Take a trip to Germany, Asia, Africa. Help some people. Maybe you're going on Oh, what's the word when a church goes out to...
A mission.
A mission. Maybe you're going on a mission to another country. Take it with you. Geocache it. Man, talk about getting extra miles on it. Any way you can do it, they're there. And we support you. Because there are millions of players in America alone. Just imagine how many of us there are worldwide.
Yep.
And I know this is a little bit political, but in light of all this hate, we are all family. We are all one person. I mean, we're all humans.
Yep.
Go out there and meet somebody. You never know. I know that there's this Japanese guy I remember back from Worlds, the last Worlds in San Francisco at the Presidio. He had the most beautiful Japanese foil collection. I wanted those Temple Gardens so bad. He had about 50 of them.
Oh, man.
And just imagine, go to another country, think about how cheap those foreign foils are going to be.
Yeah.
And then you get to bring them back at 3 times, 4 times, 6 times value. It's worth it, honestly.
Yeah. So.
And it's not like there isn't a wealth of GPs coming up internationally in the next few months.
True. Very, very true.
Yeah.
And I know that, especially with the Japanese market, and again, I've heard this from other people, they're super, super competitive out in Japan. So if you're if you're looking to pick up any kind of casual or commander cards and you want those foil Japanese versions, it would probably be a lot cheaper actually getting them in Japan. So
yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Just imagine. I've got a friend in Barcelona right now, actually. I doubt he'll ever hear this, but hey, if he does, happy birthday, Brandon.
Nice, nice.
But he's out there in Barcelona, and they play a lot of Legacy out there because it's just the way they play. Spain is drastically into board games. Like, they have family board games night, and they don't play Monopoly. They play Carcassonne, which, if you've ever played that, is one of the most cutthroat tile placement games you could ever play. But their Legacy gameplay is best of 5, not best of 3.
Huh. Interesting. Right?
So they play best of 5 out there. So it's a little bit more rounded in how you're winning and not, oh, I won. And he was playing Prized Amalgams in his deck. And the guy he was playing against was mirror match. It was a mirror match. And he beat him out because of Prized Amalgam. And the guy went over to they were at a store and said, I need a playset of Pliers Amalgams right now. Because that card was just so good.
Nice.
Right? And I mean, that's how they are out there. If they need it, they get it.
Yep.
So traveling's a lot of fun. Get out there. Geocache some Ixalot.
We want to see those spoilers. Lucky
flu.
Yep.
Oh, man. We all want to see them.
Speaking.
For the few of us that don't get out there.
Yeah.
It's up to you.
Speaking of spoilers, we have a couple of cards that have been previewed already for the new
Ixalan
set. We have dinosaurs. We have vampires. And Vampire clerics, indeed. So we have 4 cards here that have been officially previewed. One that I believe has been drawing a lot more attention than the other ones is it's even in a promotional print here. It's a black sorcery called Walk the Plank that says destroy target non-merfolk creature. Initially it seems like 2 mana destroy a creature is where we want to be, but that sorcery drawback is just so hard to swallow. I mean, do you agree with that? Or
totally agree. I mean, but if we take any note, currently Standard has been focusing on sorcery speed removal over instant speed removal because of the fact that they don't want to make it a surprise kind of thing. They want you to play your turn and be done. So, Decoration in Stone is a sorcery. Sweltering Suns is a sorcery. Radiant Flames is a sorcery. Magma Spray, Harness Lightning, or not.
Yeah.
But I think what they're moving towards is anything that's not red or blue will be sorcery speed.
Interesting. I mean, that part of it makes...
just because they're not fast.
Yeah, that part of it makes a little bit of sense.
It's just, is that what they're doing? Do they want to try to slow down the format? Is turn 5 winning the game too quick?
Well, and that makes cards like Unlicensed Disintegration seem like, you know, they're just too good. You know, and that card is incredibly powerful, especially when put in the right deck.
What about Anguished Unmaking?
Yeah, I mean, that has neither red nor blue in it, but it is instant speed and it exiles. I mean, you pay the life, but...
But that plays into Black's ability of, I hurt myself to do things. So it makes some sense.
It does. It does. It will be rotating though. So
I'm willing to bet you we will probably get instant speed removal in black that costs life soon. Ulcerate was really strong, but nobody played it because it hurt so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So we'll see.
Yeah. So walk the plank. Very flavorful, but we'll see just how much play it will actually get. We do know that Merfolk will be a tribe. We haven't seen any of them yet.
Well, we've seen some in the not.
It's blurry, yeah.
Official-wise.
It's hard to see, but we know they'll be there. But we won't talk about those today. We'll talk about a couple other ones that are very interesting. Greg, you mentioned a vampire cleric.
Oh, yeah. Bishop of Rebirth, if I'm not mistaken, is its name. And that is a 5-drop. And it is a pseudo Sun Titan.
Pseudo Sun Titan? Whatever do you mean by that?
All right, here we go. Bishop of Rebirth. It is a 5-drop, 3/4 vigilance. And whenever it attacks, you may return target creature card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Wow, I can talk. So the reason why I say it's a pseudo Sun Titan is because it does not get the ETB trigger. It is only on attack. It does have vigilance, though, which is great, but it doesn't have the enter the battlefield.
True.
It happens, but I think this is great. I think it does a lot of things that we want it to do, and it's a vampire cleric. I think that's the first time we've had a vampire cleric barring shapeshifters.
I think you're right. And I think that seeing as we have...
I'll correct myself. There's some black-white vampire clerics, but this is a mono-white vampire cleric.
Is this the first mono-white vampire that we've seen? I want to say it is.
I want to say yes.
I can't think of any other vampires that are just mono-white that we've seen in the past. And it's looking like that white is going to be a heavy vampire color in this set.
Could you imagine that the vampires in Ixalan use their blood siphoning abilities to purify the blood of the natives?
That is a very interesting story point.
So it's a good vampires, but they still need to suck blood to live. So they suck the blood from unhealthy people because of the fact that the sickness won't get them. They don't care. Right. Blood is blood. And if they can save people... Why not?
Yeah. No, very, very interesting take on the vampire mythos there. I definitely like it. Sun Titan, it is not, but it definitely will allow you to play. There's a lot of 3-drop creatures in Standard that have some good enter the battlefield effects.
Well, and permanents at that fact.
That's true, but this does...
I mean, Dynavolt Tower? Godfarer's Gift, or not Godfarer's Gift, Gates of the Afterlife is less than a 3-drop.
But this does say return target creature card with converted mana cost 3 or less. That is another aspect that it is not the same as Sun Titan. And I did notice that too, because Sun Titan, you can actually get your lands back, which is pretty sweet. But Bishop is definitely only creatures. So
like I said, it's a pseudo Sun Titan.
Yep. Yeah, but definitely going to be powerful nonetheless. And we were just talking about white control decks. I can definitely see this seeing some run in Standard.
Yeah, I could see it too. I'll agree to that. Godfarer's Gifting this out seems pretty strong.
Yeah, because it does give it haste.
Like, you could get back your... I mean, if we're Dreaming Hard Selfless Spirit, but that's not going to happen.
You could get back your Champion of Wits too.
Champion of Wits would come back, do its triggered ability, then you could let it die again and then eternalize it.
Yep. Just
and then you get
value.
To eternalize this and get more things too, and it's a 4/4 with haste. Ah.
Yeah, I mean all Earthshaker Kenra, I mean that would definitely qualify. There's so many possibilities.
There's good cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
all right, so pushing on a little bit.
Yep.
We have the pseudo Inferno Titan.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you want to talk about this one?
Sure, I'll take this one. I'll take Burning Sun's Avatar. For 3 red, we get a 6/6 dinosaur avatar. It says, when Burning Sun's Avatar enters the battlefield, it deals 3 damage to target opponent and 3 damage to up to 1 target creature. So it's Searing Blaze on a 6/6 dinosaur. That seems really cool. I mean,
that does sound like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it's unconditional enter the battlefield goodness. So this enters the battlefield. You destroy your opponent's, well, Selfless Spirit won't be legal anymore. But yeah, any 3 drop out there and you do 3 damage to your opponent's face and they've got a 6/6 staring them down. That just screams like that's that
value.
Value. Yes.
It seems like value.
It'll cost you 1 more than Glorybringer, and I would see this being a follow-up to Glorybringer as pretty savage. I don't see, I mean, it's not haste, obviously, but if your Glorybringer is exerted, you won't be able to attack with him the following turn, but this seems like a nice follow-up.
Or replacement, even, depending on how heavy they want to go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The triple red definitely makes it seem like it would have to be run in one of those Ramunap red decks.
Or, you know, a 2-color, like a green-red deck that just has all the fixing.
Yeah. Or, you could run this in a tower deck, a Dynavolt tower deck. And I swear I would love to run Soulscar Mage in that same deck. I mean, it's red, but yeah, you could take down pretty much anything. If you can't take it down with the sheer damage, you could shrink it and then take it down with the 6/6 body. That seems like it would be a lot of fun.
It sounds legit to me.
Yeah. So
does it have free candy written on the side?
No. No free candy, no Pez. Sorry. All right. Well, let's move on here because I think we are actually we're actually starting to run a little long here. But
oh no! So the other card that I see in here is Unclaimed Territory. A lot of people are touting this as a new kind of Cavern of Souls because it does tap for any color, but it only taps of any color for a creature type. So what it says is it's a land. As it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. And it has 2 tap abilities. The first one is to tap, add a colorless mana to your mana pool. The second one is to tap, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool, where that can only be spent on creature spells of the chosen type.
Yep.
This seems really strong. Going into a tribal set like what we are, I feel this does a lot. The fact that it enters the battlefield untapped is great. Of course, the sad fact is, if you're playing something other than that creature type, it does not tap for that colored mana.
Yep.
But there are worse things.
Yeah. No, you hit the nail on the head there. Tribal deck, absolute auto-include. And even if you're running a multicolored deck, 3 and 4, maybe even 5, there might just be enough, you know, that you'd want to run this if you have those cards that are such bombs that you want to be able to guarantee casting them.
Right.
And you say a lot of people are comparing this to Cavern of Souls. Absolutely. But this is an uncommon, which means that a lot more people are going to be able to get their hands on this, which is great. It's going to be a much more cost-effective alternate, but it does...
For color fixing, it's good.
Right. It does not offer the uncounterable aspect, which will make Cavern of Souls still the choice of, you know, a lot of players.
Modern.
Yeah. But, you know, they're moving in the right direction here. I mean, we have Unclaimed Territory, which isn't Cavern of Souls. We have Bishop of Rebirth, which isn't Sun Titan. But it is going to introduce a lot of these new players to very powerful cards that they can then expand their repertoire on into Modern as they go on and play this great game. So, and then, before we leave Ixalan completely, we have some double-sided FNM tokens that we can look at.
Where was this at? I don't see these.
Okay, so if you do a search for Ixalan spoilers on Google or Yahoo, you can pop up with the Magic. It's www.magicspoiler.com/mtg-set/Ixalan. And it shows you the 4 well-rendered cards in the beginning. And at the very top,
I see that, yeah.
There's a link that says double-sided FNM tokens. And
what?
We see the three tribes that we've seen in these preview cards already. We see dinosaurs, we see vampires, white vampires, and pirates. And on the backside of each of these tokens, we have treasure tokens.
Ooh.
Treasure tokens are extremely similar to the gold tokens that we have seen before, in which you can tap, sacrifice this artifact, add one mana of any color to your mana pool.
Yeah, I remember hearing about this.
It's gold. So this is really cool. So we're going to have some creatures that are going to, or maybe even enchantments or artifacts, but they will pump out 3/3 green dinosaur tokens, 1/1 life linking vampires that are white, and 2/2 pirates with menace. Holy cow.
That's menacing.
That is very menacing. Yep.
I don't know. That dino looks really good. I'm kind of excited for dinosaurs. You know, I kind of think we might get some sweet legendary equipment in Ixalan.
That would be super sweet. That would be really, really cool. Yep. Yep. So there you have it. Ixalan, we're seeing the tip. Just the tip, though, right now. We've got the rest coming.
I hope I'm not on the Titanic.
No. Well, don't walk the plank anytime soon, because you want to be around for the rest of these spoilers. So, all right. Well, we have Ixalan to look forward to. We have another GP this weekend. Where did you say that was, Greg?
I don't remember. No, the next one I saw was Indianapolis, which is after Ixalan.
Okay. Okay, gotcha.
I think, no. There is one happening this weekend. That is Indianapolis, and that is a limited GP.
Okay. All right, cool. So no predictions on winning decks, unfortunately, but...
Glorybringer.
God Pharaoh's Gift, yes.
Nah, I think, I'm pretty sure the Glorybringer beats out God Pharaoh's Gift most of the time.
Yeah. No, wasn't it a blue-red spells deck that ended up taking down the last limited GP?
Might have, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, alrighty. Well, before... go ahead.
There's a couple things here in editing. Remember, we have a new email address.
Yes. What is that email address, Greg?
We have it at thewincondition@gmail.com.
Right. thewincondition@gmail.com.
And... I think we were making a plug for ourselves over the past couple of podcasts for a giveaway? Were we doing a giveaway?
I think, you know what, Greg? I don't think we've mentioned this yet. This is our 20th episode.
Oh my God, I completely forgot to say that. It is our 20th episode.
We've made it to episode 20. We are finally there, and we could not be more excited. And we wanted to ring in this new, I'm not going to call it a decade, ring in this new era with a giveaway. So we were giving away an Invocation Kefnet. And we had some people enter into our contest.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to line up all of our entries. We're going to have Greg punch out a random number generator. And we are going to reveal to you all who the winner of this Invocation Kefnet is. Thank you all so much for your retweets, for your follows, for spreading the word about the win condition. We really, really appreciate it. And we're looking forward to doing a whole lot more of these for you guys in the future. So, with all that being said, Greg, why don't you crank out that number generator and give us a number?
Moment. I see a one.
One?
A one.
Wow. Okay.
Right? Talk about a low number.
Let me get my list here. That means, Jason, you are our winner of our Invocation Kefnet. And Jason's handle on Twitter is @RosemarysDad. So... congratulations, Jason. You will be the proud owner of a foil Kefnet Invocation. Go ahead and DM us with your contact information, and we will ship that out to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
Or email us.
Or email us, absolutely, at our new email address, thewincondition podcast@gmail.com. But yes, thank you all for entering. We love it. We're going to give away more stuff here moving forward, and really looking forward to growing as a podcast. Speaking of growing as a podcast, don't forget to visit our sponsor, flipsidegaming.com. Any order over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to get 10% off your purchase. Not $10, 10%, which can really add up. And
just remember, it's got to be at least 10 bucks.
It does. And free shipping for all orders over $100, which these new Commander decks will definitely fulfill that requirement.
Yeah. Or maybe boxes of Ixalan.
Boxes of Ixalan will definitely get you there.
Maybe a case even. Case of Ixalan. Get ready for Standard 2.0.
Yep.
The changing of the guard. Yep. We're losing Oath of the Gatewatch, Battle for Zendikar, Eldritch Moon, and Shadows of Over Innistrad. This is a change up.
It is.
Might be worth buying some new stuff.
It is. And you know what? I don't think I've ever thought I would be saying this, but I am honestly relieved and refreshed if we do not have masterpieces or full art lands.
It is kind of nice to not have them for once.
They're so cool looking, but that aspect of them being so special has been greatly, you know, sort of grated over this cheese grater over and over and over again. So
we are getting unstable soon.
That's true too.
Possibly borderless lands.
Look out for that. So
That's exciting.
That's very exciting. So anyway, Greg, where can they find you?
You can find me at noobslasher2003 at Twitter.
You can find me at MTG_Sean on Twitter. We are at The Win Condition. You can email us at thewincondition@gmail.com. You can also go and check out our logs of videos that we have saved on twitch.tv/teamwincondition. Once we get our hands on these commander decks, Greg...
I've got mine. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Once I get mine from Flipside, I'm sure I'll be cracking them open. And we will be playing online for you guys to watch. And
we're going to put some recordings up, right?
Yes. Yeah. We want to start up a YouTube channel where we can post our podcast as well as some gameplay videos. It'll probably come a little bit clearer there. But definitely looking forward to expanding and evolving as a podcast now that we're in our 20s. We're almost legal. It's great.
Oh, no. Can we rent a car soon?
Oh, almost. Almost.
Maybe when Ixalan releases, we can rent a car.
There you go. There you go. Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, I think that's it. So with all that, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Guys, have a good night or day or time frame, whatever it may be.